I've got some handouts for you, one sheet. It's called Biblical Archaeology Definitions. Well, my talk today is recent discoveries in the lands of the Bible. About a year ago, I gave, several talks here on this subject. To start with, I'd like to recommend the Reasons to Believe course, Biblical Archaeology. Have any of you taken that? John? Just one person? Okay, maybe I can make it interesting enough where some more of you would take it. It's a worthwhile course. It is rather long, 15 weeks. But it's worth it. You would learn a lot about the Bible that you never imagined, archaeology and anthropology. When the next one starts, I'm not sure at this point. Go to reasons.org and you can check the date for the next class. So that kind of got me going into archaeology, at least studying it. I'm not an archaeologist. I'm an ecologist. So that means I kind of delve in everything. And so this is one thing that I'm interested in. And how many of you were here a year ago when I gave talks on this? A lot of you. Okay. So this is just a follow-up on that with some more discoveries. And I'm going to concentrate largely on David. David in the Bible. And a few other things too. But David is a very important issue. Some of you have actually seen this statue of David by Michelangelo. That's in Florence. Oh, you have? Okay. Anybody else? Wow, a lot of you. That's great. I had a close-up picture, but I thought maybe it would offend some people. But as you can see, he's totally in the buff. And I think I got a comic or two for you, just to get things going. There's one on David and Goliath. These came right out of the little periodical I like a lot. It's called Biblical Archaeology Review. So, you know, this is a good one to have if you're at all interested in archaeology in the land of the Bible. There's a lot of archaeology magazines out there, but this one specializes in the land of the Bible. So these came out of there. I borrowed them. They're supposed to show credit, but somehow it didn't come through. Here's another one. David and Saul. And let's get to the real stuff here. Okay, why is David so important in archaeology? And there's four reasons there. I'm going to give them to you. I'll read it because we're recording this. And biblical authenticity largely revolves around David and Solomon. Minimalists claim he didn't exist. What's a minimalist? Anybody want to read it off of your definition sheet? Why don't you all just read it silently, okay? And we talked about it before. Those are biblical archaeological skeptics, modern day ones. They're called minimalists. They claim he didn't exist. Minimalists, or if they admit he exists, and I'm going to give you some reasons why they're starting to admit it, they move him to a lower chronology. That's more recent time. Instead of around 1000 BC, they move him up to around 900 BC, closer to that era. And what would that do? What do you suppose? Why would that take away from David? Moving the chronology to a lower... Yes?
Well, wouldn't it change some of the ways that people would look at what David wrote in the Bible? They say, well, he could have written that after it happened or something.
That's true. Yeah, things wouldn't look so prophetic, would they? It would look like he's just copying some of history, but... And that's a good reason. And also, by moving him into a lower chronology, you're moving him into a period of less activity, less building, less construction going on in Israel and Judah. And so you make him less powerful, less effective. And on the other hand, believers say David gives credence to the modern claim to exist by Israel. I think you're all aware of what's going on in the Mideast, all the issues there, and many of the countries that surround Israel claim that Israel should not exist, that there's no historical background for that, and many other reasons. Yes, John.
I remember some years ago the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem said that there's not a shred of evidence of any Jewish occupation of
That was during World War II, wasn't it?
Yeah,
he kind of linked up with the Nazis at that time. And so, yeah, that was quite a history.
How would moving David to a later time
cause him
to think that Israel didn't exist? Or in that language?
Well, it gives a little more ammunition. It doesn't prove that he didn't exist, but if you can show that he wasn't a powerful leader, it kind of indicates that Israel and Judah were not powerful nations. And they existed, let me see here. It would mean he's more likely the leader of a small time chieftain instead of the king of two countries. And so, it would give ammunition that he may have existed, but he wasn't important. So, therefore, why is Israel clamoring that they have grounds to exist? You know, they didn't ever had anybody there that took a strong foothold.
So they never had a nation.
Yeah, that's what it would be. They weren't a nation. They were just small towns. Yeah, Ross.
Do they claim to have any reason to say that he didn't exist? Do they have any positive evidence for that?
Yes, until the early 90s, there really wasn't any evidence other than the Bible. There was one large stela that was found, a large carved stone that vaguely mentioned David from the 13th century BC, Egyptian. We'll get more into that in a little bit. But another thing is that there was an invasion of Israel in the early 900 BC. Shishak, an Egyptian pharaoh, invaded Israel and supposedly took all the treasure from the temple. But when you go back and look at the walls in Karnak, you know how they would scribe all over the walls their military battles that they won, which of course everything they describe is that they won. And so there is no mention of Israel there, even though the Bible says that Shishak did invade Israel. And so the minimalists will say, see, it's not on the Egyptian walls. It was never carved. No mention of Israel is there. Therefore, they didn't really exist. So that's one of the things that the minimalists will use. The problem is that that wall in Karnak, half of it's all eroded away. So, you know, it could have been mentioned. We don't know.
Mark?
Yes?
Yeah, I read that several times, and the Egyptians wrote everything down, but this says in one of them that they call them Hebrews or something, were laid low at that time. Mm-hmm. They went in there and completely they would have been erased them, but that was one of the great histories on that wall. That's from Manasseh, wall of
Manasseh. There is a couple mentions in more recent times. So I'll get to those in a second, okay?
What was the relationship between Judah and Israel?
Okay. Judah is the southern kingdom. The two tribes of Israel, of the 12, live there. Judah and I think Benjamin was the other one. And the other 10 tribes were north of that. It was Israel. Saul managed to unite them to some degree. and to one country. I don't know why they were split to begin with. They just didn't get along.
The sons,
yeah, fighting and infighting. And so David thoroughly united them into one country and called Israel. And then Solomon maintained that. And then Rehoboam, when he came after Solomon, did not do a very good job, and they split again into two countries. So that's how it was. Now, today, of course, there's only one country. We don't recognize Judah as a second country.
David was sort of like the King Arthur of England.
He was. A good description. Good way to say it. Let me see if there's anything else about these minimalists I want to say. Minimalists are a group of highly skeptical Mideastern scholars beginning in the 1990s that unfairly criticize the Bible as being fictional or mostly fictional in regard to names, places, occurrence, and dates. Picked up the disbelieving torch from the higher critics or documentary hypothesis from that was European from 1790 to 1940. So they just sort of evolved out of that. The person you see here is Israel Finkelstein. He's a minimalist. And one of the most controversial theories is his description of 10th century B.C. Jerusalem, the period associated with the biblical kings, David and Solomon, as being a mere village or tribal center. That's what this guy... He's a very well-known archaeologist in Israel. And but he sides with the skeptics for the most part. And he's Jewish, too. So some of the strongest minimalists are Jewish. Okay, this is one of the earliest things we've got that might mention Israel. The Merneptah victory stela, it's Egyptian. First possible mention, and it says, Israel is laid waste, his seed is not. This engraved granite slab is more than 7 feet tall, found in western Thebes, Egypt. It was carved in 2008 B.C. and is now in the Cairo Museum. It described the destruction of Israel by Egyptian forces. Merneptah was the son of and successor of Ramses II. This reference suggests that by 2008, when inscription carved, the Israelites were already in the land of Canaan. Just the mere fact that they're mentioned is evidence that they existed. So,
were there not Chaldean and Sumerian records that referred to?
There is. There's one Assyrian in Nineveh, and that was Sennacherib. And he invaded Israel, and there were carvings all over the wall there, so that one's well known. That's a little more recent, though. Okay, here we go. This is something that did I miss one there? Let's see. I did. Okay, that one. The Moabites. Stela, discovered by Charles Warren in 1868. A victory stela by King Mesha of Moab, approximately 840 B.C., making it the oldest possible reference to David. The Moabite, this one actually says David in it, but it's not absolutely clear. And it tells about how Israel and Judah allied with Edom to fight a losing battle against Moab. It had been, you see how it's been sort of fixed there? That was, when it was discovered, the local villagers broke it up. There was a fight over who owned it. It wasn't because it was, you know, it supported somebody's religion. They broke it up, but the fellow that found it, Charles Warren, had made what he calls a squeeze. And I don't know any artist in here. I think that's like
a rubbing,
you know, where you lay something over a stone and you can rub it with a pencil or something and you get the, he called it a squeeze. But, so because of that, he was able to go back and make cement castings of what had been broken and lost. It's too bad because, you know, It was intact originally.
Mark?
Yes.
Warren. Surely there's historic evidence for Israel and Judah. And, I mean, somebody had to do all this stuff, right?
Well, you know, it's all destroyed. That's the thing in archaeology.
But Israel and Judah, I mean, we know that they were separated, and we know that they came together. I mean, isn't that history?
Biblically, it's history, but nothing else. And remember, as a scientist, you would not want to base everything on the Bible. You want some physical evidence so you can say, look, this is archaeology too, and it supports the Bible, or it disagrees with the Bible. And unfortunately, there's very little archaeology. All that happened, I'm going to show you some in a minute, some new discoveries. But all that has happened is, and everything that was made in archaeology, 99.99% is destroyed after a few hundred years, a few thousand, and there's just a dribbling of what was there, and someone has to find it. You got to go do expensive digs, then you might find the handle on a pot. That's going to tell you a lot, or a little bit of a writing. Al.
That guy, Finkelstein, him and another Jew archaeologist, they're both very highly respected.
Yes, they are.
They wrote a book called The Archaeology of the Bible, which I have.
Mm-hmm.
And they deny the fact that they found that all these, at that time, people back that time, and, the Bible writers tend to exaggerate all these kingdoms. You know, Kingdom of David, huge. I mean, they were little tribes. Everybody was beating up on them, as you can see there.
Yeah.
So, but they, you know, the writers tended to exaggerate. Once in a while, they'd get a victory here, another victory here, but mostly everybody would come over and beat them because they were so small. You know, like,
I know what you're saying, Al, and that's how the skeptics think. That first of all, I mean, the minimalists and higher critics actually took an unscientific stand that the Bible had to be inaccurate. It has to be. That's not scientific.
So they were looking for proof.
So they went out and they looked for proof, and then Finkelstein covered almost all of present-day Israel. He's done like surface studies all over it, just skimming the surface, and he's found pottery and stuff all over. So he has some evidence to support his viewpoint. But then, you know, it's where you move the time scale that matters. You can find the evidence, and you move it forward or back, and it makes a big difference.
Well,
and so,
I think what you're saying is, proving something from the negative is not scientific.
Exactly.
Just because something doesn't exist doesn't mean that it didn't happen. Just because you can't find archaeological evidence. So most archaeologists and most historians will take writing and say it's true until it's proven untrue.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Total opposite of what these guys,
are doing.
They say it's false. Proven.
Excellent point. Excellent.
They couldn't find it. That's what they said. They didn't say.
Well, no, but you don't deny the reliability of something on the negative.
Right.
That's just not what you do.
That is not scientific.
And that's just not the negative.
Now, okay, let's go on. That's very good. We have some evidence here. Ross?
Real quick, just for a foundation, Mark, what are the dates that you believe David lived?
Yeah. David, his actual life, let's see here, it was around the 11th century. David lived from 1040 to 970 B.C., and he ruled over Judah from 1010 to 1002 B.C., and over the United Kingdom from 1002 to 970 B.C., so 40 years, a little over. And so, and then Solomon, of course, took over and kept it united.
Are all of the records that are mentioned in the Old Testament about the kings and that their all of their activities according to the book of all of those lost? All those books that specifically mentioned? Like the annals of the Judah and Israelite or something, or kings of Judah?
Yes, they are mostly lost. You have some books that were written when the Romans were there. Some historic books, Josephus and people like that. And so, but before that, no. There are no books, no historic.
Those mentioned in Kings and Chronicles and Samuel about the kings of Israel.
That is it.
Unless they were inscribed in stone. But
they aren't. If they are in stone, we haven't found them. Except for this that you're looking at right here. Yeah, John, did you have a comment?
In the Old Testament, there's a listing my number may be off, it would take one or two, about 21 kings of foreign kings, including that of Egypt. And it's interesting that archaeology has borne out that the listing and the chronology of the listing in the Bible has proven to be incredibly accurate. Even more accurate than, let's say, the Egyptians' own listing of its kings.
Right.
Israel's listing of the Egyptian kings is more accurate than the Egyptian listing.
That's right.
Of its own kings and other countries as well. So that's been proven to be very, very accurate.
Well, you know, it wasn't proven. Remember I mentioned the higher critics earlier that came around 1790 to 1940?
Okay.
There wasn't much proof back then. And so they had a lot of power to say, the Bible's wrong. But since then, really since the late 1800s, they've been finding evidence after evidence after evidence of all these foreign kings that the Bible mentioned.
Well, the higher critics, almost on maybe every point, have been proven by archaeology to be consistently wrong.
That's why they're out of the picture now. That's why you've got a newly named group. And they don't like the name minimalist, by the way. They'd rather be called skeptics. Okay, here... the Tel Dan Stela, excuse me. By the way, it's Stele, Stela, or Stele, are all the right pronunciations for a singular stone that's been carved on. Plural is Stelae or Steles. So, you know, it gets kind of confusing. But in any case, this was found around... back in around in the early 1990s, 93, however, this view was challenged. The fragment was a statement by a court official named Hazael of Damascus, Syria, who claims to have defeated Jehoram, king of Israel, and killed Ahaz and overthrew the house of David. So this is very clearly says David on it. Now, yeah, from between 800 and 845 BC, so a few generations after David. But it shows you that the enemies of Israel still recognized that there had been a David. So these were stones that were put together, and I have a replica to show you.
Let's
see. I have it. Don't tell anybody. I checked it out at the museum, the Louvre.
Indiana Jones.
Okay. I'll turn it the same way for you. And this, you can buy these things, replicas, from the Israeli Antiquities Authority. They're the official government. They're the ones that make these. And so this is a replica of it. The real one's a bit bigger, but... nevertheless, you can see that it was found in three pieces a year apart. And there may be more pieces where they found this. And so I really kind of hesitant to pass it around. If it gets, although this is a soft floor, isn't it? But you guys are eating. Right in here, David is mentioned across here. And so what do you think of this? I think it was a. Let's see what it says here. I'm not sure what it was. Most of those are made on granite or marble, limestone possibly. That's a little softer though. Sandstone wouldn't. You know, that wouldn't work at all. So this is just cast with plaster, of course. It's hollow. And I will pass it around. Be careful.
Don't trust
Al.
Yeah, don't write your name on it or anything. So my question, yeah, Jim.
Can we get a quantity discount on it?
Maybe. If Colleen would carry them at the desk there. They have all kinds of good replicas, including Dead Sea Scrolls.
Yeah.
And
what does it cost to buy them?
Oh, something like that might be $100 or so. Yeah, Richard.
What's the language?
On that one, it's Hebrew, older Hebrew.
Okay.
Excuse me, it can't be Hebrew. It's it's got to be Syrian or Assyrian. Because they're the ones that wrote it. They're not going to use Hebrew to write about it. And of course, it's bragging about how they destroyed Israel. The house of David is overthrown. And so what's the significance of that thing? It's not from David's time. It's over 100 years newer. So who cares? Who cares about it? It's well recognized, isn't it?
Yeah.
In Assyria it was. And so what did Israel Finkelstein say about that, Al? Now come on. Come back to my question.
Okay. I don't know. But
wait a minute. I want my question answered first. What Finkelstein had to admit that there was a David. So that stone, at first they were saying it's fake. Of course, you know, oh, it's fake. And then later, oh, someone made it 200 BC. And but no, they figured it out. They know the timing exactly. And so Finkelstein will now says that there it was a David. But remember what I said earlier, what he says about him? He's just a local chieftain. Nothing important.
Who would remember him 100 years later?
That's true. Yeah, a local chieftain who's going to read the land of David? No way. All right, so Al, what is it that's so important?
Was the Bible written around 1500, wasn't it?
The what?
The Bible, wasn't it started to read about 1500?
Well, the Bible was...
goes back that far, I think.
You know, it was probably oral tradition. You know how the Jews are, they like to... They're like Islam, in a sense, they have everything memorized, and you know their scholars are very careful with the verbal oral tradition, and so it probably they think it wasn't put to script for sure until during the Babylonian captivity in 570 BC around that area. But we're finding bits and pieces. When I gave a talk here a year ago, I showed you these little silver amulets, scrolls, and that was from around 750 BC, and it had what's the prayer called? The Lord is one. So we know that some of it was in writing back around 800 BC. For that. No.
What about the during the period of the kings, having the scrolls with the word of the law written on it, mm-hmm. using those and finding those? I mean, that's written, at least certainly speaks to written records of everything back to Moses, which was, my understanding, where the written word started. When God gave Moses the specific instructions, he wrote it down,
yeah.
and they kept copying those as necessary to keep them going.
There's no evidence. If there was, it's all destroyed. Remember what I told you about archaeology, anthropology? 99.99999% is gone.
You're saying there's no outside evidence. Within the Bible, though, the writings go back to the 14th.
The Bible is the evidence. And as an archaeologist, an honest scientific archaeologist, you can say, we have some written evidence, the Bible. If you're a minimalist, you're going to say that doesn't count. But so unfortunately, they do have a lot of power. Yes, Dan.
The most reliable copy we have of the Old Testament, I think, is Hosea more complete than any other books.
Okay.
And there's one of them in Israel. I went to see it.
Yes. All right. I know what you're talking about. Let me finish, okay, because I can save a little time. Dan's talking about the Dead Sea Scrolls. Now, how far back can we take those with the Dead Sea Scrolls? Those are the oldest things we have, other than that little silver amulet I told you about. About what? 200 BC or so? That's about the oldest we can go back with the Dead Sea Scrolls. And, yes? You know some older things? Go ahead. Right. It's there's lots of, I mean, probably 1,000 little pieces of evidence in support of it now. I mean, I'm not going to talk about all that, but there's books on it. Here we're going to talk about a new find, sort of new, David's palace, confirmed. And you would think that's something that must have been confirmed 100 years ago. No. Only in the last couple years. And there's still some who would disagree. And so this is just a map of old Jerusalem. And you can see in the lower right corner there is the city of David. That is where David first began to build and construct.
Is that where the oval is,
Mark? Yes, where the oval is. Very good. And you can see just north of that, or above it, the Temple Mount. And that'll get your reference cleared up here. And you can see around it the Muslim, Christian, Armenian, and Jewish quarters. Those were more of a Byzantine type of thing. That you know, after the Romans left, those quarters started to develop more. But for now, I just want you to see where the city of David is. How many of you have been to Israel and Jerusalem? Several. And you probably didn't walk through the city of David, but you saw it from a distance, right? All that stones and archaeological work going on there. And so, they never had a lot of evidence, but just a few views of it. Here's a city of David with the Milo, some would say Milo, and palace as it may have looked. And just starting at the top there, let's see if I can get the cursor going here now. Oh, there it is. Up here is where the Temple Mount would be. You know, remember, it wasn't built in David's time, it was built in Solomon's time. And as you work down that little spur, that hill spur, you can see where the palace could have been. And that's right here. And the stone stepstone structure. What has been discovered is that stepstone structure and the palace, at least the footings of the palace. Only recently have archaeologists started to come to agreement that it really is David's palace.
What percentage consensus of that would be roughly estimated?
Probably 50% at this point. Which is a lot, considering it used to be 5 or 10. Mainly it was just biblical archaeologists, the ones that are too extreme the other way and don't want to see the evidence that much. Yes, Mara.
When people write history, is there information about other things that happened? Do we have proof and documents and so on and so forth of anything else that's written before these times? I mean, how do they write history?
You're not talking about the Bible now. You're talking about...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you pick most other societies like Assyria and Egypt and Babylonia. They often carved what they wanted to be known either on stela or on walls, large mural-like. And they may have put things on papyrus. We do find some. You know, in the dry desert, you find a little bit, but... almost all of them are very, how should I say, egotistic. They're all from some king or leader who's saying how he beat, you know, the Babylonia beat up Assyria and back and forth. That's what they're always listing. And then historically, we know they may have actually lost these battles, but they. Yeah. Well, we find other evidence, and eventually we might even find the battle site, and you can tell who did what. And but almost all of those are embellished. They're like, you know, distorted versions.
But like the Egyptians, you know, they wrote, put those things on the caves and did all the art stuff. How far back can the history go of man? Do they have the...
Any formal writing? Have you heard of... what's the writing? Cuneiform? It's Sumeria. Around 3000 B.C., in Sumer, which is the northern Mesopotamian plain, we find these clay tablets, thousands of them. That's what they did. They took clay, wrote on it. They had scribes in cuneiform. The first written language was cuneiform. About 3000 B.C. And it was very simple at first, and it got evolved and became more complex. And eventually, everybody liked it. Cuneiform was used all over, all the way to India. And that you can find out a lot, because it has mundane details. Like somebody traded an ox for, you know, some silver or something. It's all in there, and you see how they did it, and how they had to...
I just heard this week that the very first recorded Sumerian words were from a scribe who complained that his teenage son wouldn't listen to him.
There you go. There you go. Isn't that perfect? Now that, see, that kind of stuff is far more valuable than some king's notes on a wall that were chiseled in saying, oh, I wiped out all of David's land and his seed is gone forever. Well, we know that's not true, you know. And so that's all we have from them. But the Sumerian, the clay tablets are better. If you, Babylonians made clay tablets, Sumerians, Assyrians, Hittites. Hittites, you know, we thought didn't exist until recently, but we found stuff, clay tablets. That's a little more honest than detailing.
Why do you think that no artist or anything ever did anything of Jesus or anything? I mean, like, you know, on a wall or anything. I mean,
Ten Commandments, remember one of them is, remember, yeah, no graven images. That's all I can figure.
Yeah.
Although with some of our Christian friends don't take that so literally. Yeah, Ross. This one here, Ross?
Well, no, the last one. Well,
you could use this one.
Okay, well.
Well, you see the City of David, and then just above it is the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount is like, I think it's like a quarter mile long, close to it.
David is half a mile, you think?
Quarter mile.
Okay.
Yeah. And of course, Jerusalem on this expands way out beyond this. This is just the old city.
Right.
Okay, well, yes.
I have some magazines. My sister-in-law gave me Biblical Archaeology.
That's this one, yeah.
Okay, and they have all the pictures of that and what they found,
yeah.
And the debates about the different parties. Is that a reliable magazine?
Yes, it's reliable. It will take articles. It's the one I showed you earlier, this one. They take articles from minimalists. Or from maximalists, you know, those that are extreme Bible believing, and actually read into it a little bit too much. But the whole gamut, all in between archaeologists. So, and they, you can comment back, and the other professionals comment back, hey, you overdid it here, you know. So it's pretty good magazine. So if you want to keep up on what's going on, let's move on here so we don't get. No, it's like a year, yeah. Yes, Al. Go.
But getting back to those tablets.
Yes.
I don't know. That's one of the things that started me becoming a skeptic.
Okay.
Back in probably about 10, 15 years ago, there was a there was an exhibition of the tablets of Ur in the LA, LA County Museum.
I missed it.
And it was they found over 700 of these tablets.
Yeah.
That and they were all buried and broken, and a lot of them were broken.
Yeah. They're brittle.
That was the first writing that developed,
mm-hmm.
because of trade. They used to trade with the Babylonians. They used to trade all. Because civilization started right there at the two rivers.
Yes.
The
cradle of civilization, the whole Mesopotamian.
So that has the Epic of Gilgamesh.
Yes.
That tells you the whole story of the flood. And gods that resurrect and get killed and resurrect.
Okay.
That tells the whole thing.
All right.
So where did the
All right, let me comment on that, the Epic of Gilgamesh. Let's make sure I get it straight here, because I think it was Sumer. Yeah. The Epic of Gilgamesh is a... King Gilgamesh ruled, according to the... tablets, 127 years over Uruk, modern Iraq area, in 2500 BC, so it's at least 1,000 years before the Bible was written, and believed to be real historic. Over years, he became mythical, like a modern superhero in poetry. One version of the clay tablets that dates to 650 BC. See, remember, they kept getting rewritten. This isn't back to 2,000 or 3,000 BC at 650, well after the Bible is already in existence, at least it appears that way. And it has a garden story with a tree of life and a serpent and a flood story, but it may have been copied from the Bible. We don't know, because, yeah, you can't look at the original Gilgamesh epics, which is from around 3,000 BC. These tablets we dated to 650, so, you know, it was always getting added on to. Is there another? Yes, Steve.
Two comments. There have been general questions of how do we know what is true? And biblical archaeology.
Didn't Pilate say that? What is true?
We didn't have biblical archaeology.
Yeah. Okay.
And the point being that if we have, there are very few magazines in the Christian community that have peer review is necessary for truth.
Good
biblical
point.
Archaeology is one of them.
Yeah.
If we have any interest in certain topics, it's good as Christian community people to know about these magazines and order them and support them,
mm-hmm.
because they are the determiners of truth, ultimately. Another would be from American scientific affiliation,
mm-hmm.
for things like we, creation, physics, astronomy, that's definitely Christian, and it's peer review.
Yeah.
We need that in our community.
Yeah, that's a good point. Peer review is what I was trying to, that's the term I meant to use for this. It's got good peer review. What is truth? I'm not sure.
And that's good. We need to be a super brain.
Yeah.
Gilgamesh and the Enuma-Elish, Sumerian, and so forth, go way back, and the further we go back, we only get little bits and parts.
Yeah.
That's normal for anything. We don't get the full story until things disappear as they get older.
That's the problem.
But interesting about both of those is that if we compare them to Genesis 1 and 2, there's a lot in common,
mm-hmm.
between them. For them, they have political overtones and Marduk and so forth that sheds blood and he wins and everybody else gets subjugated.
Yeah.
But in the Genesis 1 and 2, we don't realize it, but that Genesis 1 especially is some of the most high Hebrew you could ever have. Poetic.
Mm-hmm.
There's no room to slip in anything. Things are like a machine that go together. And it goes together so well that it preserves well. And it probably came from oral tradition,
mm-hmm.
before Moses, as most of these things came. So the common question is, well, what is the origin of the Sumerian Gilgamesh and so forth and so forth?
Yeah.
And the Bible. And the Bible is so high Hebrew that it preserves it best.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Steve mentioned the Enuma-Elish. So those are holy tablets that the Sumerians also had, dating back to close to 3000 BC. And it has a creation account in it. But, and you're thinking, well, wait, that's way before the Bible. That's like 1,500 years at least before the Bible. Did the Bible copy that? The Enuma Elish? Well, no, because there's some big differences. The Bible says that creation came ex nihilo, out of nothing. The Enuma Elish says that creation came from eternity, that there's always been time and matter. Gods have been produced along the way. Otherwise, it's got some similarity. So that's the biggest difference between what the Sumerians were saying and the Enuma Elish compared to the Bible. Yes, John?
You said when comparing various creation, comparing that to the Bible.
Yeah.
The Bible has, I think you said, 11 to 14, similar. 11 to 14 events, three or four conditions that the earth was in, and then their proper sequence. He said the best he could find, and they all agree, what Saul has done. He said, however, outside the Bible, any creation story, the best he could find were just two dates that agreed with Mark.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So,
big difference.
Yeah. Well, here's another view of the. There's a big model in Jerusalem of you know, old Jerusalem. If you've been there, you probably saw the model. This is just a picture out of it, and it shows where that spur, that hilly spur that I showed you earlier, and you can see Mount Moriah in the top. That would be, of course, where the temple was, and then the palace down below that on the spur. It's a little different than what we know is there now. This model's been there about 30 years. So notice the, well, unfortunately they wrote the word palace over it. So you don't get a good look there, but here it is today. And you can see the Temple Mount there with the Dome of the Rock and the El Aqsa, that smaller dome, it's sort of blue. And then you work your way down towards the bottom. And David's palace would have been right up in here on that part of it. I just lost my pointer, sorry.
That city of David supposed to be something that was basically all David's property, and it was the city dedicated to taking care of him and his family. Is that what that...
I haven't heard that. You know how David got Jerusalem. Remember, he actually took it by force from the Jebusites, I think they were called. And so after he had been there a while, he decided to have a palace built. And
but it seems that was outside of Jerusalem, a separate entity.
In a sense, yeah, it is. It's a compound built on that spur just outside of the main part of Jerusalem. And outside of the temple, well, there was no Temple Mount before that. But.
Now, do you have any idea why that was only discovered recently? Was it buried and they just started getting...
Exactly. Yeah, the excavations have been going on for a while, but it's very confusing there because you've had layers and layers and layers, and some layers are mixed. You know, people will come along and they will take material out of a temple that's abandoned, and then they will use it to rebuild. So for the archaeologists, it's like confusing. And so no one dared to step up and say, I think we got it now, until they did more and more and more excavation. Al? No more long comments, okay? Just a question if you got it. Please.
Did David have, how many wives did he have? 100,000?
No. David probably had about 10, I think. Yeah. Solomon had a lot more. And concubines too. Yeah. No comment on that. Let's see. Okay. All right. Now you see a couple of terms in here where I showed you that the palace probably was, and that is the large stone structure. That would be the palace. The other name for it is large stone structure. Stepstone structure is the base that holds the palace up. It looks like steps. Those are all recent discoveries. Recent confirmations, I should say. Here's two of our well-known archaeologists that are working on the palace and the stepstone structure and parts of the city of David. Kathleen Kenyon, you've probably heard of her. She's been deceased for, I don't know, 20 years or so, but she did a lot of work there. She was working there when it was under Jordanian rule back in the 60s, before the 67 war. So they let her in, and she dug a large cross section on the eastern slope of the city of David from the top of the hill downward. And I'll show you something she found in a minute. And then Elat Mazar, she's a daughter of Benjamin Mazar, and believes the evidence. She's the main reason we now believe we found the palace. And she believes she has uncovered during months of excavation an extraordinary discovery. She believes she has found the palace of David. And only a small fraction of the structure has been exposed. Some archaeologists believe Jerusalem was no more than a tiny hilltop village when David was there. The discovery of the palace or other large public buildings from David's time would strengthen the opposing view that he and his son Solomon presided over a civilization grander than the collection of rural clans, some historians say, made up the Jewish kingdom. So whether David was a tribal chieftain or a visionary monarch matters deeply to the Jewish historic narrative. Okay, now that's the base. That's the what we call the Milo or stepstone structure. It supports the palace. The palace would be the upper part there, which is, in this photo, is the excavation has not started. There's another view. I mean, it wasn't. I don't think it was steps to actually walk up. It's pretty steep. You could if there was a rope or something.
Is Milo more of a retaining Hebrew word?
Let me see. I got something on that. Yeah. I don't remember what it meant. I think it meant something like mound. It's Hebrew. Where was I? Okay, one second. So this is a diagrammatic depiction of the stepstone structure. Building on previous textual and archaeological evidence, identifies these monuments as respectively the remains of David's palace, not excavated, and the Milo, or large stone structure. And this is the palace. Doesn't look like much of it. Well, all you're going to have left are the base or the foundations by this point in time, recently excavated by Elat Mazar. And you can see a person in there for reference to size. This isn't the entire palace, but it's part of it. It's also called the large stone structure. And Elat Mazar dates the buildings in David's time of 10th to 11th century B.C., early Iron Age. David's palace is prominently referenced in the Book of Samuel, 2 Samuel 5:11 and 2 Samuel 16:22. When Nehemiah returned from the Babylonian exile half a millennium after the reign of David, he repaired the city wall and organized a dedication procession. One group on the east side of the city was described as having gone up the steps of the city of David on the ascent to the wall, past the house of David, up to the water gate on the east. Now, it's pretty well described here. The location, date, and scale of the large stone structure, that's the palace, matches the biblical description of King David's palace. And that was a quote from a well-known archaeologist that is one of the editors in that little magazine I showed you. So after David conquered the Jebusite stronghold of Zion, he is said to have renamed the area the City of David and fortified it from the Milo upward. That's in 2 Samuel 5, 7 through 9. So everything's fitting together real nice in the last few years, Warren.
Well, yeah, this seems like pretty strong evidence.
It is. But here's the thing. There's not a stone that says David on it. You think the minimalists or even the middle-of-the-road guys. They want stronger evidence. But they're pretty much falling in line now. Why would a palace be built there for a local chieftain who has, you know, power over 100 people?
But the fact that it matches the description.
Matches the biblical description. So everything's coming together here. Bible, archaeology, history. It's coming together. And we have a few other points here helpful information. It's only a few. There's many more. But here's an idea of what it might have looked like. An architectural reconstruction of David's Phoenician-built palace, constructed after his conquest of Jerusalem in the 10th century BC. So David brought the God's tabernacle from the wilderness to its final home in Jerusalem. He expanded the city, which showed very little growth in the 1,000 years prior to his arrival, made it the spiritual and economic capital of the world of his time. 2 Samuel 5:9 states that after he conquered Jerusalem, King David made it his capital. Quote, David then took up residence in the fortress and called it the City of David. He built up the area around it from the supporting terrace inward. That's NIV. At the same time, the Phoenician king Hiram of Tyre offered to build him a palace. So that's who built it. John.
You may be having this on a subsequent slide, but King Solomon, I think they refer to it as colonnade entrances to the city. They have found a common architecture all the way up in northern Israel,
yeah,
on the southern Israel, Judah.
You were right, John. I'm going to get to that in a moment. Thank you, though.
Okay.
David's palace. Here's what another rendition, a diorama, what it may have looked like. You see the stepstone structure there, and in Samuel where it talked about that group celebrated and walked up, probably the path you see on there up to the palace, and the palace is drawn in here. Looks kind of like adobe on this model. Let's see if I got any comments on that. No. Okay, so where did all this lead to? There. That's right out of that little magazine. Look at David. Okay, let's get away from that. Okay. Here's some ivory utensils that Elette has found, Elette Mazar and others. Are you going to find ivory utensils in a low chieftain's area? No, these are extremely expensive things for them. And she found these. She found a lot of things. And she found these clay boule of the City of David. Anybody know what these are? Well, I have a little bit of information there. What'd they put them on?
Money.
Not money. There's seal envelopes, if they did, paper. Seal impressions discovered by her. Mentioned in Jeremiah 38:1-3. These two bulle, the people's names on them are actually in the Bible. It's found right near the palace. And shows strong agreement between archaeology and Bible. And let's see what I wrote here. They were discovered by Elette Mazar during her excavation. Bear the names of two royal ministers mentioned in the Bible story of Jeremiah, prophet of the Old Testament. These two men are mentioned together in the Bible as ministers of King Zedekiah. That's in 597 BC. As the Babylonians closed in on Jerusalem during the last years of the first temple period, Jeremiah, prophet to Judah's last king, advised Zedekiah and the people of the city to surrender to Nebuchadnezzar's men so that their lives and city might be spared. They wouldn't listen to Jeremiah. We know what the results are. According to the Jeremiah 38:1-13, the two ministers had Jeremiah thrown into a pit because they did not like the message of surrender he was preaching. Well, he was preaching what God told him to preach. They had listened, maybe the first temple would still be there. And so, yes?
I'm glad you're mentioning the battles. I think there have been, you know, 15 or 20 major battles to the death where the conqueror wanted to demolish the city. Why is there anything left at all?
Good point.
You're finding little details made on a clay here. How can that be? It's almost miraculous to look at these little pieces and those ivory implements.
It is.
You've got people coming in there in scale, soldiers, trying to decimate the people and carry them off.
Right.
And then the Romans went in there, burned the temple down, you know, did their best to demolish it.
They took it apart stone by stone.
Right. How come there's anything?
It something fell in the cracks. Well, you know how you got the Wailing Wall. You know that one piece of the base of David's city, and that's somehow that got left. The little bits here and there got left because they were too inconvenient to destroy.
Too big.
And so within those, within the cracks and crevices, you find things occasionally. Okay, what John was talking about a minute ago. Here's a capital from David's palace. Elegant proto-Aeolic, that's Greek-like, capital suggested of Royal Iron Age architecture found by Kathleen Kenyon back in the 60s. And this is right below the palace, just in a pile of rubble, you know, as they excavated. Conveniently, something got left, or to our advantage. Does this indicate a small town chieftain? No. There were columns in David's time. Well, this is from David's time.
How big is that?
Let me see if I got a note on it here.
Part of a building?
No, it was usually what the Jews would do in front of temples and important buildings. They would put them out front. They were more for decoration and not to hold the building together so much.
But it was like smaller than a person? Or?
This is just the top. You know, the capital means the top of a column. And usually the columns put together in pieces. So this is what's left, John?
It's probably about a foot wide.
Quite possible. Ross?
You know, do you have a feel for what the size of David's kingdom was at this point in population? How many people did he rule over?
No, I'm not positive. Anybody have an idea on that? Yeah, you're talking about Israel and Judah, the United Kingdom, right?
Yeah, well, you know, we're talking about a small town chieftain versus David, a king, you know.
Of a kingdom.
Yeah, it would be nice to know what the size.
Good point. I don't know. I'll find out. Could be around a million.
Well, populations in general were vastly smaller in those days.
Yes.
In all countries.
A city could have like 5,000 in it, whereas for us that'd be a town, you know. And in India, a town has 1 million people in it. They call it a town. So, what only reference we have when Moses, the Exodus, supposedly there were a couple million people at least that exited with him. Is, you know, Jewish and Egyptians. A lot of Egyptians came too. So, if that was a couple million, what remained, you know, 500 years later. John?
This is not what I was referring to.
Okay.
Different places in Israel, north and south, they have discovered entrances to the city where there's particular columns. The architecture of the columns are all identical.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
And that shows a widespread culture.
Yes.
At the time that they were built. Just not localized.
Yeah. Well, are you talking about the gates where they have four chambered gates?
Yes.
Yes. I talked about that a year ago. Don't you remember, John?
I'll remind you.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
This is typically where I say no more questions.
Okay. I'll get done. Yeah, no more questions. Let me get through it, okay? A little bit on the current state of the Bible credibility. It's difficult for the minimalists to still say what they're saying with that tell Dan Stela. It's pretty hard to deny. So I think the rest of that, you know, they relegate David's influence to being a local chieftain. They believe that the lack of evidence of many Hebrew cities and fortifications in Judah prove that David's reign was insignificant. if kingdoms were united as Israel. However, new archaeological discoveries are giving us even more evidence. Here's a new one. It's Kerbet Kiafa, and you can see it's right, not far from Jerusalem, and just outside of the West Bank area, and which may soon become a country, I guess, if our president has his way. Let's see. From it's a one period city, so it doesn't have all this layering and mixing and everything. So you can be get real accurate evidence there, and it's Elah Valley, guarded roads from coastal Philistia to Jerusalem, and a 100-acre urban military stronghold. The central part was about 2.6 acres. Bible places Battle of David and Goliath near this, and the town of Gath is right there. And so it was a military fortification to keep the Philistines from moving inward, away from the sea and overrunning Judah. The Bible mentions it as they think it's the Sha'arayim. Steve, can you pronounce that? Is there supposed to be a guttural sound in there somewhere? Okay. So, okay. Now here's the central military portion. 6 acres, heavily fortified by casement walls, one period Iron Age, four chambered gates. That sounds familiar, John. Just in 2013, they found the footing of this multi-storied administration building. This thing was at least 3 stories high. And, you know, you could see for miles from there, you could probably see Gath. And so this is critically important to show that Judah, the southern kingdom, was strong. It could build fortresses like this. It wasn't all in the northern kingdom only. Yeah, remember, big for that time. Okay, now here's the foundation of the administration building again from an aerial view, and you can see a Byzantine building put within it sometime between the and during the Byzantine period. So much wasn't nearly as strong as the fortress that David had built there, the administration building. Okay. All right, here's another find from there, the same place, an ostracon with letter writing on it. This is the inside of a pot, picture a pot. And somewhere on the inside, someone wrote some letters in there. It's a part shared writing on the inside of a pot. Oldest known Hebrew text ever discovered. It's proto-Hebrew. And 1,000 years older than the Dead Sea Scrolls. So it doesn't have biblical statements though. And
back when Hebrew was more pictorial. Right?
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't nearly as intricate. Here it is again. What's strange is some of the letters are flipped upside down or sideways. And I have my own theory about that. Working with my granddaughter, you know. She's sitting across the table and I'm trying to write upside down for her so she can read it. Sometimes I flip the letters. Or even turn them sideways. So I think someone was reaching in the pot upside down trying to write this in there. That's why some of the letters are flipped in here. And I won't get into all the details on that. We're running out of time. But that's an amazing find. Because the minimalists always said, hey, if there were any Hebrews, they didn't even have writing. They couldn't have written a Bible. They couldn't have written anything. This is just a common worker that wrote this inside of it. Now here's going a little beyond David now. This is back to the Dead Sea Scrolls. Much more recent. But this one caught my interest, so I put it on here. David, do you want me to quit now? If I'm okay. These are the copper scrolls. And most intriguing, baffling scroll to be found among the collection. Describes vast amounts of temple treasure at many sites. Describes 4,630 talents. That's 58 to 174 tons. Of gold and silver. hidden in various places. Let me go back one here. I'll tell you where some of it said. It's real cryptic and hard to understand, and the Hebrew on it is difficult because it's not what it's different words than you find in the Bible. So you know those who decipher it have a difficult time. But there's been 23. They found two scrolls 8 feet long. They had to couldn't get them apart, so they had to cut it very carefully into pieces. Then you lay the pieces out and you can read it. And like some examples of where some of the treasure is hidden. In the gutter, which is in the bottom of the rainwater tank. In the second enclosure, in the underground passage that looks east. In the water conduit of the northern reservoir. So, you know, that's no one has found any of the treasure yet. I think I got one more slide. This was just found last week, or maybe a couple weeks ago. Dead Sea Scrolls, new Dead Sea Scroll finds. New. They're tiny, like this big. They were in phylacteries. Everybody knows what those are? All right, look at the picture. Have you ever seen, gone to a synagogue or been to the Wailing Wall or something? You know, the Jews wear that little thing on their head and wrap leather around their arm, have another one here. Those are phylacteries. And in it, they put scrolls. Well, those have been in storage since 1952 by the Israeli Antiquities Authority. Some guy finally said, well, I'm going to do a CAT scan on them. Found these scrolls in there. So now they're just starting to unwrap them. They can compare things from Dead Sea Scroll times with how, you know, the Jewish customs and how they pray with present day. We won't get into that. That's the, you know what that is, the new discovery. That is it for this time. Okay. And we're out of time, right? Okay, let's pray. Dear Lord, thank you for this beautiful day. First day of spring, I believe. All the blessings you bestow upon us. Thank you for the scientific, archaeological work that's going on in the land of the Bible and all over the world, Lord. We ask you to bless these archaeologists. Help them to find Jesus and to not be biased against your word. Be with us throughout the week. In Jesus' name, amen.